Al-Shaair gets suspended 3 games, and the Eagles continue their surge and open the conversation, which begs the question, are they the team to beat? This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros and Chris Kostich. We have a great show planned for you guys today, as we'll discuss. We're going to lead off with the latest news from this morning, which is that Texans linebacker Azeez Al-Shaair has been suspended 3 games for no reason at all. I mean, it was just completely ridiculous. He never should have been suspended. He basically just tapped Trevor Lawrence. Of course, I'm being satire right now. That was maybe the worst hit I've seen in a long time. Holy crap. It wasn't the issue that it was a hard hit. It was the fact that it was a bit of a late hit. I understand there's split seconds. And this was on Trevor Lawrence, by the way. As he was going into a slide, maybe it was a little bit of a late slide. And I think the issue, I'm not saying that it was too late. I'm not saying that this isn't on Azeez Al-Shaair. All I am saying is that, there are split seconds from the time that the slide occurs to where the linebacker actually has to deviate from his course of hitting the player. This was not that scenario. You could clearly see there was enough time for him to at least dodge or at least hit him in a different part that wasn't his upper body or his head. And there's the issue there. It's a tough situation because when you look at a lot of these slides, some of them do happen late. And there's also the fake slide that has become a thing. Where quarterbacks.
That's outlawed, though.
It hasn't been a thing for a bit.
Sure. It hasn't been a thing since Kenny Pickett was at Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. But it's still. That's kind of hard to enforce, though. Because who knows how it's going to end up happening? There could be some hesitation. And this isn't that scenario. But that was a pretty bad hit. And I hope the kid ends up being okay, Trevor Lawrence. I think he won't be out for too long. I mean, he's definitely concussed. But the fact that he wasn't apologetic about it until he said it in a press conference, I mean, that...
And an Instagram post.
Yeah. And in an Instagram post, but... In the middle of the game, you couldn't be a little bit up. Like, he's fighting people. He's getting angry about it. Like, dude, you did what you did. Like, holy crap. What do you guys think?
I'd have to agree. I mean, it probably would have been a 2-game suspension, maybe only one. That's just being kind, just for the hit alone. And he probably got an extra one for the reaction afterwards. He ended up inciting a brawl afterwards as well. And it fought fans. That's easy enough.
It's like he apologized on Instagram. He apologized in a press conference. He did all of that. But what were you doing during the game?
Yeah. I mean, my thing is he probably was like, well, you know, I fucked up. He probably realized that after the fact. Heat of the moment, you never know what the fuck's going to happen. He was probably like Mahomes, and he just saw black or red or whatever in that one, in that quarterback docuseries. I just saw black, man. I don't know. I blacked out when he's talking shit to, I think it was Max Crosby or something like that. I don't even remember. But probably one of those things, though. And he realized after the fact and was like, you know what? Fucked up. Hand up. My fault. But... You're responsible for your own actions.
Was this a dirty hit? Yes. Yes, it was. And look, I went back and I watched. I originally thought he led with his head. He didn't. He led with his forearm and elbow. But that doesn't change the fact he was aiming for Trevor Lawrence's head. And I'm tired of all these Instagram referees and ex-referees and, like, these basically social media refs. Like, oh, I don't know, it was a late slide. Okay, cool. A late slide doesn't negate the fact that you went for his head. You literally went out of your way to put your forearm into his head. Lawrence's knee was already on the ground. He was already down, giving himself up by the time Al-Shaair launched himself. Yeah. And anyone with eyes can see that. And you have these people that are like 35 and up, these old, or I won't say old, because, you know, they're 35, they're not old. But NFL fans have been around a bit. It's like, oh, it's a soft league. No, this was a, no, that's just a ball play. It's like, do you people have CTE too? This was not a late slide. Everyone's like, oh, it was. No, it's not. And do you know how you can tell it's not a late slide? See, we have this miraculous thing called eyes, and I recommend you use them. And here's the thing. We also have to address the pretentious prick named Nick Caserio, who is their current GM, who literally swore at the media saying it's BS that, you know, that Al-Shaair has a reputation as a dirty player. To which I want to say, Nick, do you know why he has a rep as a dirty player? Because he is one. This isn't even a dirty player. Aziz Al-Shaair is objectively a bad person. And that's the thing. He's like, oh, I see red, I see black. Cool. Awesome. Swell. Like that scene from the whatever that Chris mentioned. That's all well and good, but you're on the football field. And I don't know, maybe play with a little bit of discipline. And get this. It says here on First Take, Stephen A. Smith, you know, who usually sticks up for players whenever they've screwed up, has said Aziz Al-Shaair probably doesn't belong in the NFL. And this isn't even the first time he's done something like that. I remember he first burst onto the scene back in 2022 against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where he literally tried to choke Tom Brady, put his hand on Tom Brady's throat. We all remember that. And hell, what about earlier this season, where he literally punched Chicago Bears running back Roschon Johnson? So Nick Caserio, on the off chance you hear this, shut up. Just shut up. He did it to himself. He is literally the second coming of Vontaze Burfict. And who could forget that smarmy note that he posted that, you know, that his agent totally didn't write for him, where he's like, anybody who knows me knows. Like, no, Aziz, the issue is we do know you. We know not who you are, but we know what you are. You are an objectively bad person. And you are playing this game strictly to hurt people. And we're told from the time we're little, actions speak louder than words. And his actions, you know, obviously say infinitely more than some cheap, probably ChatGPT written apology. And one last thing. Notice that he was not apologetic until the backlash. Meaning, he was never going to apologize if he wasn't called out on it.
Yeah. I think I forget if it was the NFLPA vice president or the NFL vice president that said it or not, but when they're handing out the suspension, he said, and sorry for the delay because it kind of like just came to mind when we're talking about this, but NFL VP of football ops, John Runyon, your lack of sportsmanship and respect for the game of football and all those who play, coach, and enjoy watching it is troubling and does not reflect the core values of the NFL. The use of troubling is, I just found it a little funny, but I think that quote kind of just says it best in wrapping this whole thing up when we're talking about this situation.
Yeah, I mean, the Players Association Union, what is he, the president, you said, Runyon is?
No, it's the NFL VP of football ops.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you got the league outright saying it. I mean, once again, this is, well, I guess what I really hate is how people are trying to make this a gray area issue. It's not. It's really simple. It was not a late slide. And even still, even if it was, he still had time to move but no, he did move. If you see, he literally lowers his arm to initiate contact, to put his forearm elbow area directly into Lawrence's head. And worse yet for Lawrence, we were talking about, oh, he might be hurt for a bit. If I'm the Jags, don't pull a Tua, shut Lawrence down for the year. I mean, did you see him afterward? His hands, he's like clutching at the air and stuff. His hands are closed up. Yeah, that's not good. So absolutely, you got to shut Lawrence down for the year. I know you want to win, but you got to shut him down. And to the Doug Petersons of the world, they're like, oh, but we need to win. To which I say, Doug, you are done anyway. Just accept it.
Yeah, I mean, you guys pretty much have covered it. Like, I mean, he gets what he gets. And honestly, I think a 3-game suspension is pretty fitting. I think that's a good enough amount of games. And like, it's not 2 where it feels like that could be a little, like, maybe not enough. Definitely not 1. That's basically a slap on the wrist. But 3, that's enough to get the entire organization's attention, especially since they're trying to fight to stay in the playoffs, because the team itself as a whole is another story. Like, holy crap, are they starting to fall apart? The fact that I just can't believe that they've fallen off like in the way that they have. And when you look at, I mean, the fact that you won by only 3 points, 1 possession against Mac Jones, even after your player decided to get dirty and knock Trevor Lawrence out of the game, Mac Jones made it a 1-score game, 3 points, not your starting quarterback, who's also iffy, by the way. So I'm tremendously concerned with this Texans team, top to bottom. CJ Stroud doesn't look like himself either.
Almost blew a 16-point lead in the fourth.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on. We're going to go to the Eagles and debate, is this the number one team in the league? That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros. Can you believe this was once a baseball?
Adam, you're with me and who else?
What's that?
You didn't mention me, man.
With CJ Medeiros and Chris Kostich. That's what I said, didn't I?
I didn't hear it. Chris, did you?
Yeah.
I wasn't really paying attention, to be honest.
I have a dog who destroyed my baseball, but all right. So listen, the Philadelphia Eagles have now won their 8th straight game, and they beat a team that was arguably the best offense in the AFC, looking at the Baltimore Ravens, and the score was kind of close. 24-19 is close, but I mean, that last touchdown was garbage. It was literally garbage time. It was scored with 3 minutes left with three seconds left in the game. It wasn't particular. Like, this was a game where, this was a game where the Eagles pretty much had it. It was comfortable from the get-go. I mean, the Ravens started off with the lead. They were up 9-0, but it never – the Eagles came up with it pretty quickly. And you look at Saquon Barkley, who has become the centerpiece to that entire team. You also look at Jalen Hurts, who looks like he's settled in to a groove. They have a decent passing offense, good receiving core. But overall, I want to look at the way this team is as far as the rest of the league is concerned. In particular, is this team the team to beat? And we've been talking up the Detroit Lions all season long as the team to beat. They were my Super Bowl pick. And I wanted to compare them to the Lions here. And it's extremely close. As far as their defenses go, I actually give a slight edge to the Eagles. I think they're more well-rounded. They have a better pass rush. Their secondary is a little better as well. In fact, it's much better. The youth that they have over there is unbelievable, and they still have Darius Slay, who's still a decent corner in his own right. As far as passing offense goes, I still give the edge to Detroit. The Eagles have good pass catchers. Jalen Hurts can throw the football, but the Lions, their offense, they can lean on their passing game a lot better. As far as rushing goes, the Lions are really good. They have Sonic and Knuckles over there. Our guys, Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. But the Eagles, oh boy. Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts on the RPOs, with that offensive line that they have that is notorious for their rushing ability. Overall, I'm still going to give the edge to the Lions just because I think that passing ability makes them more versatile in games. Game script is going to favor them in a playoff game because the question comes down to this. Which team do you trust more to come from behind in games? The team that is run first or the team that is pass heavy? I always favor the pass heavy team because if you're playing from behind, you have to throw the ball. You're never going to come back from down 2-3 scores if you're just running the ball all the time. It drains the clock out too much, and it takes too long to get to where you need to go. And it's not as efficient. Saquon Barkley averages, what, about 5.5 carries a game? Five and a half yards per attempt. Jesus Christ. What are you going to trust, that or a 15-yard pass down the middle? The passing game is a lot more efficient there. So as far as game script goes in the postseason, there's a reason why we never see run-first offenses win Super Bowls. Because they're less efficient when it comes to coming from behind and playing in shootouts. So I think the Lions are still more well-rounded. It's not to say that the Eagles are a bad passing offense. It's just if you're playing from behind, I trust Jalen Hurts with his legs in a game that's close. Or in a game that is that they're ahead in, I don't trust him in games where you're down a couple scores because I don't think his passing ability is good enough for them to come from behind. And it's not his fault. It's just the way the Eagles are built. They're not built to pass the ball. They're built to run it. And building a team to run the ball is not going to win you a Super Bowl. And they made the Super Bowl a couple years ago because their path was so easy last time. You had to get through the 49ers, whose quarterback, at this point, their third-string quarterback, mind you, was out. Injury to his elbow, halfway through the game. So they didn't have much of a challenge until they faced the Chiefs, who would ultimately beat them in the Super Bowl. So that's something to look at when it comes to looking forward to this postseason, when these two teams are ultimately most likely going to face each other. So that's something to consider. But what do you guys think?
I mean, where in the comeback are we talking about here? Are we talking about in the fourth quarter? Or are we talking about in the first half? Because first half, let's keep on running the ball. But I could, obviously, your point stands. If we're in the fourth quarter, you need to get some points on the board. Anyways, we've been battling over that take for quite a while now. But in terms of these two teams, I feel like the Lions are still going to be the team to beat. I feel like the Lions have been more consistently good compared to what the Eagles are. Like, I think, Adam, I don't disagree with you at all that Jalen Hurts has found his footing, but I think that kind of proves the point, though, in the sense of the Eagles have not been as consistent as the Lions have been all season long. Like, it feels like that they just started to figure it out this half of the season, despite all the wins. I mean, the wins are great, but we're talking about ugly ass wins to the Browns as one of them, to give you an example. Just hasn't been as consistent as what the Lions have been. Now, I think I will agree with you in terms of where you're giving the edge. I would definitely certainly agree to give the edge to the Eagles in terms of defense. Lions are very beat up in the defense. Under Vic Fangio has done fantastic. A lot of very good young core. Still a very good pass rush. They figured it out, and they shut down probably the best offense in the league to 19 points. And the Eagles are now one of two teams to hold the Ravens to under 20. And the other team is the Steelers. And the Steelers have done it the last three, four times, I'm pretty sure, including this year. So I'd have to give the Eagles the edge on defense, but I still have to give the Lions offense more of the edge in terms of who they have as their play caller. That, honestly, could just leave it at that. Ben Johnson being your play caller is that much of an edge for your team, to be honest. And the Lions offense has been almost unstoppable this entire season, I would say. Like, the only time I feel like that they looked weak was the second half of the Bears game last Thursday.
Helps that they have targets coming out of their ears too.
Yeah. No, of course. I mean, the Eagles also have targets, but that's just not the game that they run. And I would also agree that I would take Saquon over both Gibbs and Montgomery, but it also helps the fact that you have two backs that you can use like Montgomery and Gibbs at the same time. So I feel like at that point, it could be a toss-up. I'd love the Lions to use Jahmyr Gibbs more than 9 carries. That'd be nice. But I would have to agree with the all-around assessment that you just gave, though, on that.
Yeah, and looking at, like, it, you bring up that they do, the Eagles do have targets. Up until they got A.J. Brown back, That was a stretch of time where they were struggling a lot.
Yeah. And
then they eventually figured it out. I mean, we say that they are a run first offense, which they are, but it helps to open things up, kind of stretch the field a little bit more, which opens things up for their run game, because you're not going to be able to run the ball effectively if the teams know what you're going to do all the time, right? Like, you can't just stack the box, because then A.J. Brown's going to kill you. And it doesn't, run first offense or not, A.J. Brown is going to destroy your defense if you don't respect their secondary. So
I will say about the Eagles, though, is that since you bring up the A.J. Brown part, is that they're not at very deep in the wide receiver room. Because so you have A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith, Dallas Goedert, and Saquon as your four. We're going to call those your four primary pass targets.
Big four. Yep.
Those are your big four. After that, Jahan Dotson, Paris Campbell, and Britton Covey.
You can kind of say the same thing about the Lions, though, right? I mean, if they don't have Amon-Ra St. Brown, then they're kind of screwed. You need their number one. And Jameson Williams is pretty good, but he hasn't established himself yet as a one. And if you lost Jameson Williams,
been a good. Tim Patrick's also been pretty good as well. You could theoretically say the same thing about the Lions, but I feel like I would trust the Lions pass catchers more if we were to take away St. Brown and AJ Brown, then what do you have after that? So for the Eagles, you have Devonta Smith and the other three that I just named, Covey, Campbell, and Dotson. Dotson, we all know, is a freaking bum. And then for the Lions,
Sam LaPorta too.
Yep, Sam LaPorta. For the Lions, if we want to add in Montgomery and Gibbs as your pass catchers as well, yeah, you have Jameson Williams, Tim Patrick, Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson's, we'll leave him out, but Khalif Raymond and then Antoine Green, who are both on IR. So the Lions, in a way, are shorthanded. They're not as deep as you would think.
And if you look at their rushing game, they have two guys, but I look at the Eagles having two guys in that backfield too, because I count Jalen Hurts too. Run pass offense. That's because you can still run with Jalen Hurts. In fact, do it very well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same depth chart there. Cause, what's his name? Jared Goff isn't throwing. He's not running.
Yeah.
But not like Jalen Hurts.
Yeah. So. I think there's very different ways that you can look at these two teams and also come away with potentially the same conclusions as to what we're saying right now, I guess. Like I just said that I don't think the Eagles are that deep in the wide receiver room. And then you look at the Lions and they have two guys that are on IR. So, and after that, like they basically only have four, maybe five guys ready to go. After that, forget about it.
CJ?
First and foremost, when you look at these teams, sure, looking at the roster is imperative, but you got to look at the injury report. So last game, I'm sure you saw Quinyon Mitchell, one of the front runners with alongside Jared Verse for Defensive Rookie of the Year, is banged up. He got hurt. He played the rest of the game, but he was noticeably different. Right? And on top of that, your tight end, Dallas Goedert, is now considered week to week with a knee injury. And there are some sources that are suggesting that he might end up having to go on IR. N'Kobe Dean is also banged up at linebacker as well, and Reed Blankenship has a concussion. But for the Lions, I didn't realize this. I won't say the wheels are coming off, but the check engine light is on for them. I didn't realize how horribly banged up Detroit is. Right off the bat, wide receiver Khalif Raymond on IR, eligible to return week 17, but that's a big if. Or defensive rotational piece John Kaminsky, he's one of their glue guys. Injured reserve, it says he could return to the playoffs, not guaranteed. Alex Anzalone, I think, can only return if the Lions go to the Super Bowl. Linebacker Jalen Reeves-Maybin, his 4 weeks has passed, but he's still on IR. Promising rookie Ennis Rakestraw is still hurt.
And then you also have a million questionables there as well.
Yeah, and, oh, yeah, it's true. But it's the questionables that are scaring me, because last week alone – so your left tackle, Taylor Decker, is hurt, and he missed week 13. And it's a knee injury, too. And you as the Lions, you better pray Decker's not hurt. Because when was the last time a team won a Super Bowl without their starting left tackle?
I I couldn't really think of any because
you can kind of say Andrew Whitworth. That
definitely, I guess.
Maybe
Rams because they had Note Boom. So
yeah, the thing is, another thing too is just how their defense continues to be ravaged. Josh, last game alone, they lost Josh Pascal, Levi Onwuzurike, and DJ Reader. They were all hurt in week 13. Actually, I think Reader just has a new injury, but yeah, their entire defense has just gotten chewed up and spit out. And not through any fault of their own. It's just the injury bug is hitting them harder than I think a lot of people have mentioned. But the thing for Philly is just, I don't know why. I mean, I'm buying them, but they strike me as one of those teams where I always say where if a loss hits you, they strike me as one of those teams where instead of rebounding, they're going to get down on themselves and start finger pointing and collapse. Because like you mentioned, a lot of it does come down to coaching. And honestly, I don't think Nick Sirianni is or can be the adult in the room. I think he's like that saying, everybody acts tough when they're up. Because when the Eagles were skidding earlier in the year, we saw what happened. For me, that's not a momentary thing. We saw his true colors. That is, not once again, I could say who, but that is what Nick Sirianni is. And so the thing is, if the Lions lose a game, I think they're going to huddle up in the locker room, work out their issues, and come back stronger. If Philly loses a game, I think it's going to be ugly. There's going to be yelling, finger pointing, and Sirianni doing his best petulant toddler impression. And even though Philly's winning, like, for example, they just beat the Ravens, and you can call me a box score watcher, but oh my God, they got outgained. They got dominated in time of possession. It's just that when you just look at the numbers alone, and even when you were put to the eye test, it's kind of interesting, I think, that Philly won this game. Then again, you know, we know that the Ravens aren't all they're cracked up to be, but still. But even beyond that, you beat the Rams. Oh, boy. You beat the Commanders in a one-score game. You wailed on the injury-riddled Cowboys. You beat the Jacksonville Jaguars by one score. You beat the Bengals. All right, they're one of those plucky teams, so I'll give you that. You wailed on the Giants. You narrowly defeated Cleveland. So, yeah, those are their last eight wins. A lot of them are one-score games, or they're absolutely bullying, you know, bottom feeders. And I'll give them credit for beating the Ravens, but, and, you know, every week we do top three, bottom three, they do deserve just for that to be on top three, because as long as they have Saquon, they're going to be fine. But the thing is, not everybody has a perfect game. And my big fear for the Eagles is, how do you adjust if you get punched in the mouth? Now, Detroit is a team that can take a punch, you know, the old proverbial punch in the mouth. I don't think Philly can. So what happens if Saquon Barkley is having a bad game? What happens if he can't get off, he keeps getting stuffed at the line, the other team's crowding the box, and they sit back and say, all right, beat me with your arm. Can Jalen Hurts do that? I mean, I think there's an argument both ways, but to be brutally honest, I'm not impressed with his throwing ability. I'm really, really not. I mean, think about it this way, right? 2,494 yards, 14 touchdowns, 5 picks, 68% completion percentage. That's good, but I'm also noticing he's doing a lot of short passes, and he's not allowed to air it out. And this lends a lot of credit to Adam's point. You can't run on a game-winning drive. It's going to have to come through the air. And can he do that? I can't say yes. I can't say no. All I can tell you is that the jury's still out. And as far as his passing ability goes, he's only broken 300 yards once this entire season, and I think he's even got four games where he hasn't even cracked 200 yards. No, five games where he hasn't cracked 200 yards. Everybody's saying, oh, but his rushing ability makes up for that. And I've heard that argument before, and it's a very simple-minded point of view, because what difference does it make? Once again, you cannot be scrambling on a game-winning drive. It's going to take too much time. And I
think a lot about the Ravens in 2019. And I think the Titans were able to sort of they were sort of able to expose a lot of their weaknesses that weren't showing during the regular season when they beat them, which is that, like, yeah, the Titans had a run first offense themselves, but my point is that they got ahead very early, which is something that no team was able to do on the Ravens that year. And it had Lamar Jackson throwing it, and he was able to throw for over 400 yards, but he also turned it over four times because his passing ability, it's a good pass. He's a good passer, and he's gotten much better since 2019. But back then, when it was merely a compliment to his game, he wasn't able to do it effectively enough, and they lost. And I think it's a similar thing with most run-first offenses, where if you force them to throw the ball, I'm not saying rushing isn't important. It's still good to keep defenses guessing, but that's my point. You want to keep them guessing. You want to be able to do a lot of different things, not just run, because running only helps when you're ahead, or even you can even say even when they're in a shootout. But if you're behind and it gets later in the game, are you winning by running with Saquon Barkley? And listen, I understand your point, CJ, saying, yes, if Saquon has a bad game, I don't think Saquon will ever have a bad game behind that offensive line. He has one of the best, this is the best offensive line he's ever worked with, and we are seeing his full potential, where if he had this in his entire career, he might already be a Hall of Famer. Like, he'd be a shoo-in by now. But I don't think he's having a bad game. I just think even if he does have a good game, I don't think you're coming from behind with Saquon. You're not. If you're running the ball all the time when you're down 2 to 3 scores, that's going to be hard to overcome. You have to throw it in those situations. And the Ravens had to throw every time they've been in the postseason, and it's the reason why they only have a couple of postseason wins over that span. Because they can't throw it well enough. And again, I still think the Eagles were lucky back in 2022.
Yeah, and there is one more thing about Philly. We need to talk about their defense, specifically their defensive backfield. It is one of the youngest backfields that we've seen in a decent bit. They're really good, but when I see on Mitchell, Cooper, DeJean, Reed Blankenship, Philly say, oh, we got dogs. Let's be real. They're not dogs. They're pups. You know, they could be, but I can't be the only one who's concerned with just how young that defense is. Cool. You know, they're like the young, scrappy kids, but what's going to happen when you're going up against Amon-Ra St. Brown? Or Sam Laporta, or, you know, got, like you said, Sonic and Knuckles out of the backfield there. I'm worried that if God forbid something happens to one of these kids where they get, or I say kids like they're our age, they're basically our age, but whatever. But what happens if they get gashed for a big play? Like, are they still going to be able to buckle down? No, most young guys can't. And we've seen that before. It's all part of the growing pains. If they were a few years along further, I'd say that wouldn't really be a thing. But now, I don't know. And on top of that, but their defense, at least on paper, is still better than Detroit, solely because, not solely, I mean, just name value alone, it's better. But let's be real. Detroit, I've already said they're injured to hell and back. However, I also do think, like, a lot of it comes down to coaching, and that's why I got to go with Detroit. I still think they are the team to beat.
Let me give you one scenario that favors the Eagles. Mm-hmm. We've talked about, well, what if they're down 2 scores? What if they're down a score? What if it's the opposite? What if they're up? Who has the advantage in that situation? Because they're going to be able to bleed that clock out. This is where the run-first offense actually helps them. Because at that point, I trust the Lions a lot to come from behind, but the Eagles also have a better defense than the Lions do. And they have a better secondary. It's a young one. They're fast. They're energetic. And if the Lions have to come back, as much as you trust them as a passing offense, as a unit, how much do you trust Jared Goff in particular to bring you back?
More than I trust Jalen Hurts.
Sure. Well, neither of them have won a Super Bowl yet. But do you trust him to beat that Eagles defense? And whenever the Eagles get that ball back, they're going to be able to bleed the clock a lot. So I'm trying to look at this in an unbiased manner. None of us are Lions fans, but I also still favor the Lions. I also think that doesn't mean that this NFC championship game or divisional round, whatever it ends up being, will be a blowout. I think this will be a very close game and arguably one of the better playoff matchups that we'll see in a while. That is if they both make it, by the way. What if one of them gets knocked out by Green Bay? Very much a possibility. But I look at this matchup and I still think the Eagles have a really good chance because Jalen Hurts has still been to a Super Bowl. Let's not act like they're not getting past the Lions because they can do it. Jalen Hurts has been to a Super Bowl. He can do it again. They have a good defense and running the ball scheme. And if that works in their favor towards the Lions, if they get up a lot quick, early, good luck keeping up with them. Because they're going to bleed the clock out on offense and they're going to give you a hard time on defense. So, I mean, as high-powered as this Lions team is.
I mean, yeah, I get it. But what happens, like I said, even if they're up, then all Detroit's going to do is just crowd the line and say, beat me with your arm. I mean, when they're up, then you know Detroit's just going to sell out to stop the run.
Yeah.
And I do not accept the argument of, well, it's Saquon, because, okay, cool.
Like, I think Saquon. I mean, that's
okay. And
he's getting that first down.
Uh huh.
Like, and if you try to stack the box, then AJ Brown beats you, which is why I think this Eagles team has really improved. They've gotten healthy on offense. AJ Brown is back. And if you dare to stack that box, Jalen Hurts will just throw it to AJ Brown and he'll get the first down that way. Then run a few times with Saquon, first down to AJ Brown.
But AJ Brown's having a down year though.
He's still having a really good year. Eh. Down year by his standards, but he's still good. I'd take AJ Brown on a down year over a lot of wide receivers.
But the thing is, sure, you could say AJ Brown's going to beat him, and that's true, but I feel like you're leaving out, maybe intentionally, probably not, one key point. Jalen Hurts has to get him the ball, and I don't think he can do that.
I think he can do it well enough. I'm not saying what I don't trust him to do is play from behind. I like his arm as a compliment. I'm not saying he can't throw the ball. I think that's more of an egregious argument to say that he can't throw it at all.
Because no, I didn't say he can't throw it. It's just like, I don't know.
If he's playing ahead, then I trust his arm a lot because then you can actually open things up for Saquon to run. Maybe Saquon doesn't become a three down back, but you can use him early on to drain the clock and then just get the first down and run it a few more times on the next set. And then just get the – if he's just getting the first down and you're just looking to drain the clock, then I do trust Jalen Hurts' arm. And if they find a way to block A.J. Brown, guess what? You have another kind of wide receiver one there too in Devontae Smith, and you also have a decent tight end in Dallas Goedert. I'm not saying I trust Jalen Hurts to play from behind because they're not a pass-first offense, but it's a very nice complement to that running scheme that they have.
True. And even if they're not playing from behind, do you trust his arm in a shootout?
No. I'd say no. Advantage Lions, but I still give him a shot.
And I'll cede that to you on if they're playing from up. But my point is, there are three scenarios for them, right?
I give them a shot. I'll sell.
Yeah, they get a shot. It's like a 60-40 kind of deal, we'll say.
It was like the Super Bowl against the Chiefs in 2022.
Yeah.
It's like it was a shootout. One team won, but.
Mm-hmm. I give them a shot. My point is, so there are three possibilities. You're either playing from ahead, you're playing from behind, or you're in a shootout. Two of the three favors, two thirds of the scenarios just don't favor Philly. I agree. My thing. So their path to victory is overall narrower in a hypothetical matchup. But either way, like, I'm not trying to take away from them. It's just like, I don't know. I'm also, like I said, I cannot stress this part enough. If they drop a game, I don't trust Sirianni to be the adult in the room. I think he's going to immediately, like an addict going back on, like it's like an addict relapsing. He's just going to be petulant and angry and do that cheap thing where he uses kids as shields. But I don't know. Like that's what concerns me, is that I feel like it's, like I said, like they say, when everybody acts tough when they're up. And I don't think it's a Philly personnel thing outside of my skepticism with Hurts. I don't trust their coaching.
Yeah. Well, I don't really trust AJ Brown, Dan Campbell's ability to not be too aggressive in times when he should just take the points. He did that way too many times last year. And there's no evidence that he learned from it. There's no evidence. They haven't had a close enough game where we can say, oh, well, he really learned here from last year. We haven't had that because they've blown every team out like 40 to 20.
And Nick Sirianni has also shown us he will do the same thing, but just say fuck you to somebody.
Yeah.
He might.
But, AKA the Saints game from this year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he said fuck you to somebody, but when has he ever been like Dan Campbell, where he's just you're going for it just for the sake of going for it because you want to bite someone's kneecap off? I'm just saying.
Sirianni sometimes does the same exact thing. So it's really just a matter of who wants to shoot themselves in the balls first.
Well, everyone's going to be aggressive sometimes. It's just you need to have some sort of restraint to it. Like sometimes you just got to take the points. With the amount of field goals that they could have gone for in the AFC Championship, if they had just settled for some points, they would be in the Super Bowl, not the 49ers. But Campbell could not get out of his own way. And he also did the same thing earlier on in that season against the Cowboys. They could have easily won that game, tie the game up, play for overtime. I trust the Lions a little bit more in that scenario. But he couldn't get out of his own way. He went for two multiple times. Just take the points, dude. Play the tie. I don't trust the Cowboys under pressure that year. He just wouldn't do it. He was too aggressive. It's engraved into his personality. And that's what I don't trust about him.
Fair.
All right. Yeah, I mean, to expand on that, I mean, the Lions are also in a spot now where, like in the past, it would be the right move because they weren't the team that they are now, whereas now they are the team that everyone wants to get at, so should probably chill out a little bit.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move on, and we're going to get to our top five draft picks. We're going to go over a little update on the NFL draft. That'll be quick. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros and Chris Kostich. So we haven't really done this yet this year, but going over the top five draft picks, if the draft were to be held today, in a little tankathon draft, kind of update here, as of right now, how it stands, the Jacksonville Jaguars have the number one overall pick. Then it is the Vegas Raiders. Then the New York Giants. We have the New England Patriots. And then it goes into the Carolina Panthers. So the reason that I felt it's intriguing to go over it now is that two out of the top three picks are quarterback needy teams. You have the Vegas Raiders and you've got the New York Giants. As of right now, the top two prospects that would likely go one and two are Shedeur Sanders and Cameron Ward. And the Jaguars are interesting because they're at number one and they don't need a quarterback. Right now, Tankathon has them going Travis Hunter. And it's interesting because I don't know if they're going to stay there. Not by choice, but simply because I believe, looking at their schedule and the Patriots' schedule, who are at number four, it's very different. So looking at the Jaguars, they have the Titans, the Jets, the Raiders, the Titans again, and the Colts. Those are all winnable games for the Jaguars, and I find it hard to believe that they're not going to win at least one game by the end of the season. Looking at the Patriots' schedule, it is also equally interesting. They are just outside the top three. They're also not a quarterback needy team, but they need a wide receiver or a tackle. And if they're in a top three spot, and let's say, so looking at what they have left, they have the Cardinals, they have the Bills, Chargers, and then the Bills again. Looking at that, it is very hard to see them winning another game this year. Maybe they get another upset, but we're not going to bank on it. We're going to look at how it is, just assuming that they end up losing out. If they lose out and the Jaguars win just one game, Jaguars fall to fourth, Patriots go up to three, and they actually have the chance to go and get Travis Hunter, who they actually need. They do need a tackle, but the tackles are supposed to go a little later in the draft. I'm thinking that the Patriots should just focus on offensive tackle in free agency. There's a couple of good names out there. Jedrick Wills Jr. is also available. Cam Robinson is out there. Lots of good names that they could go for. And I'm not loving the tackles class the more I see them. And I think Travis Hunter is the only blue chip prospect as far as wide receivers go. I know there's a lot of hype around Teteroa McMillan. I don't love him. The lack of speed scares me and kind of reminds me of N'Keal Harry. I hope I am wrong, but he scares me a little bit. And I think Travis Hunter is the safer pick. I think if the Patriots really want the sure thing wide receiver, they should hope that they can go up a spot so that they can go and get the guy who they want in Travis Hunter. What do you guys think?
I will defer my time to CJ since this is the draft we're talking about here.
I was going to be nice, but I appreciate it. Ah, oh yes. That's how already, boys. No, I'm kidding. So the way I look at it is this. Not only looking from a Patriots perspective, just a league-wide thing as far as the prospects go, I'm not thrilled with this quarterback class. And if, you know, I'm the Giants, I feel like either the Giants or the Raiders are going to get the first overall pick. Because, yes, I know the Jaguars don't have Trevor Lawrence and they're relying on Mac Jones. But Mac Jones has won games before. He is a former first rounder. He's unclutch, but if he can just not screw up for a game, they might be fine, hopefully. Just hold the line. Be a game manager, right? I know that whoever ends up first, like I said, unless it's the Jags, be it the Giants, be it the Raiders, whoever ends up at first, they're going to be tantalized by the dangly, you know, the shiny object and take Shedeur Sanders. I think that's just kind of how it's going to go. Then, however, I feel like whoever doesn't get Sanders, whoever winds up at two, they need to trade back. Because, look, I like Cam Ward. Do I think he's top five in the draft? Good. No, maybe like a little after top 10, but this QB class isn't great. I mean, Milroe's a huge question mark. Quinn Ewers has got to be the most unathletic, athletic person I've ever seen. Just so much wasted motion there. And Stetson Bennett should probably – wait, Carson Beck. I got my Georgia quarterback confused. Please forgive me. I'm still got to get into draft mode.
But Carson Beck is super overrated.
Yeah, Carson Beck took a massive step back. I mean, he's regressing harder than the Houston Texans have. And honestly, I think he should stay another year. So that being said, I know they won't because these teams are down here for a reason. They're going to throw any semblance of logic into the wind. So, yeah, I could see Ward going to as a consolation to whoever doesn't get Sanders. But then there's New England. New England is interesting because they grabbed their quarterback last year. And for all intents and purposes, it does look like Drake May can be the guy. The fact that he has looked as solid as he does despite the fact that New England is on paper, just on paper, the worst team in the league by a country mile. I mean, like I said, no, I say this every week, no blue chip talent, no like elite players outside of Christian Gonzalez. So, but yeah, the fact that he's looked as good as he did with that roster, kind of like he did North Carolina, that shows you got your guy. So if you're New England, if you get third and the Giants and the Raiders get first and second, 100% grab Travis Hunter. I do have some reservations about him. I think he's going to want to play both positions in the pro level, and simple analytics will tell you that's just not happening. It's just not happening. Maybe it's like a gadget guy for a play or two, but no. Also, if you do need a receiver, you're going to, and I mean this, you're going to need to get a commitment from him. If he does end up picking one side of the ball, you need him to say, I'm going to be a receiver. Because you don't want to draft him, and then he turns out, oh, just kidding, I'm going to be a corner. Then, no offense to Hunter, you've wasted your third overall pick. I mean, he'd be good to pair up with Gonzalez, but you need a wide receiver. You haven't had a legitimate wide receiver one since Julian Edelman in 2018. He got hurt in 2019. That's why I don't count that.
Which is why I think the Patriots really need to gauge as quickly as possible where Travis Hunter's going to play. Because if he ends up being a corner, it would be the dumbest thing of all time. You deserve to be a poverty franchise if you use your third overall pick for a CB2. Mm-hmm. He's an incredible corner, and I don't doubt that he's going to be impactful in the league as a corner. But they don't need that at number three overall. There's other ways you can address that. You need to either, with your first round pick, you either take a tackle or a wide receiver one. And if Travis Hunter decides to play wide receiver, you don't use that pick on a wide receiver at all. Or if Travis Hunter decides to play corner, you avoid him like the plague. And I'd say don't go wide receiver at all. Because again, with McMillan, two red flags. Number one, they keep saying jump ball guy because of his lack of speed.
How don't often like does that work for us though? You know what I mean?
I see
this every year.
Yeah, I hate that. Jump ball guy, lack of speed. I hate that. I see those things linked. Number two, lack of explosiveness. He may be a good route runner, but have you seen him run? He does not have much of explosiveness at all. Looks like he's just this big lumbering giant he has good route running abilities, but is he going to be able to create separation in the NFL? I am very, very skeptical. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't love him as a prospect. I know a lot of people do, and I respect that if you do. But I don't like him that much. I really don't.
I feel like it also depends on where New England ends up going with this offseason as well.
True. And there's one thing, though, I got to say. A small part of me, I know wide receivers like the sexy option, but I wouldn't hate tackle, even though, you know, Banks and Campbell or whatever. We've talked about this off camera. I will maintain this. Everybody disagrees with me, but everyone's wrong. No, I'm playing around. But I don't think New England, when it comes to receivers, I don't think they have a drafting problem. I think they have a development problem. Because nobody outside of maybe Tyquan Thornton has said, like, N'Keal Harry, Aaron Dobson, Javon Baker, all these guys, no one said they were bad picks, right? Nobody said, oh, these are terrible, right?
I mean, I hated Jalen Polk. I hated the pick when it first happened.
And yeah, I mean,
I wanted Ladd McConkey, but I liked him.
Well, McConkey was already gone because New England did a classic trade back that they tend to do, but whatever. But my point is, these guys have so much hype in college. Like, they're loved as prospects. Like I said, we like Baker, we like Dobson, we like Harry, but they come to the league and they just disappear. That
so just find the guy.
Reeks of a development problem.
So find a guy who's more developed. If you can't get Travis Hunter, who I think is the only blue chip prospect in this draft, then don't go wide receiver at all. I think either trade back and take a tackle. Which it looks like Kelvin Banks and Will Campbell are falling. Trade back and take one of those guys and go out and get T. Higgins. But you have to gauge that early on what Travis Hunter is going to do. You have to make sure that you end up with a third overall pick, because I think there's no chance in hell that the Jaguars aren't taking Travis Hunter if he's right there for him.
Do you really trust Trent Baalke, though, if they keep him? If Trent Baalke stays there, then, like, I'm not even cracking a joke. I, like, legitimately don't think it's a done deal, because Baalke is
Who else are they taking? Like, who? They don't need a tackle because they just re-signed Walker Little. They traded away Cam Robinson, but re-signed Walker Little. They still have Anton Harrison under contract. They have their tackles set. They have two starting level tackles that they just committed to. So what they're going to get is either they're either going to stay there and draft Travis Hunter, or they're going to trade back and take that kid Carter. At that point, whoever they trade back with, they're going to take Travis Hunter. So that's still a lose-lose for you, New England. So do your best to gauge. End up with that number three overall pick, but do your best to gauge whether or not Hunter is even going to play wide receiver. I would think he would, because there's more money in the wide receiver position than there is corner. And I think there's more – you're more well-liked if you're a corner than you are as a wide receiver than you are a corner. There's more money in it. There's more fame. But that's just me. Chris, do you have any other thoughts, or do you want to move on to your top three, bottom three?
I'm not going to be able to stick around for top three, bottom three. I got to get out of here. But like I said, I'm not a big draft guy. So whatever they do. I mean, like I kind of inferred a couple minutes ago, though, like the draft, the way that the Patriots are going to draft is going to be wholly dependent on what they end up doing in the offseason. Even if that means Travis Hunter moves the corner and we get T. Higgins, or we have Travis Hunter as the number three and we get T. Higgins, or a receiver like T. Higgins or something like that. It all really just stems from who they end up getting for or who they end up picking up in the offseason. Even if it's a lineman, it's still just going to end up deciphering what they end up doing with the first couple of rounds of this draft.
Yeah, which is, again, they need to gauge what's going to happen in the draft, where Travis Hunter plays, and who's going to draft who where. And based on that, they should figure out whether or not to go all in on T. Higgins or Chris Godwin.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, have fun with top three, bottom three. I got to bounce, boys.
All right. Enjoy. All right.
Peace.
See you later. Fun, buddy.
All right. Well, since Chris is gone, and there's no rush on this segment anymore, let's keep getting into it.
All right. Now you're speaking my language. But yeah, the thing is with McMillan, Adam, I can't say anything you haven't said. If you've watched the show for a bit, chances are you already know how I feel about those tall, not as explosive, not as fast jump ball guys. I do not like them. Maybe it's because I have N'Keal Harry PTSD. It could very well be that. But I haven't seen them pan out at a high rate. McMillan, I want to like him. Every instinct of mine says, oh, maybe it won't be that bad. But I don't know. I don't like it. Not to mention, isn't Arizona like in the Big 12 for like colleges? Yeah, I got news for you. Big 12 is literally like basically the ACC with Colorado. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Also, N'Keal Harry went to Arizona State. So,
well, this is Arizona. It's technically different.
Well, same state. But I'm very – the amount that he reminds me of N'Keal Harry and Quentin Johnson scares me. Yeah. It scares me too much to draft him at number three overall. Definitely – and not number four either. If they're at four by draft day, then I'm not
– You might want to trade back.
I'm trading back and taking a tackle. And even then, I'm still very – what if they just go – I'm just thinking, because I don't like the tackles in this draft either.
I Banks more than I like Johnson. Johnson reminds me too much of Peter Skoronski, who's got the traditional everything you'd want in a tackle, just that his arms are too short. He's got to move to guard.
But what about Abdul Carter? You still need an edge rusher. If you go all out on free agency on offense, you go and get Cam Robinson to be your left tackle. You get Jedrick Wills to be your left tackle. You find yourself some more interior line help, and then you go and get T. Higgins. If you just go all in on the free agency class and you don't go and take anything on offense in the draft, what about that? Because you do need an edge rusher. That's pretty high up there on the list.
Yeah. It's true. I wouldn't hate it. I still, as far as edge rushers go, I'm not crazy about this class. I mean, I'm just going to say it just as a whole. I'm not crazy about this class in general.
Me neither.
I'm not going to go as far as to mention it in the same breath as the 2022 class, which you remember the 2022 class. You, Tuck, and I saw it at Buffalo Wild Wings. We saw what happened. We know the lore. But I would not mention it in that breath because I think the top players are still better. But, oh, I'm not loving this class. Abdul Carter, I think, is good enough. He's got a really good edge rusher. He's a freak athlete. But I just, after him, it's kind of a crapshoot. And I feel like it's, I mean, I'll be real, it's way too early. We definitely have to, we got to wait, see how some of these things shake out. But overall, I like Carter, but we would only if you get like T. Higgins and Cam Robinson and all them in free agency.
I mean, if you do talk about 2022, that draft class was a really good wide receiver class. Drake London went 8th overall. Garrett Wilson went 10th. Chris Olave 11th. That's a pretty good. I mean, that's a pretty good class. So, I mean, it worked out pretty well, but I'm still, and George Pickens did go in the second round. I mean, we could talk about him, but if it turns out to be like 2022, then I would not mind in the slightest going out and getting a wide receiver, but I just don't think it's going to be that way. I don't like any of the wide receiver prospects in this class besides Travis Hunter.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, there are some guys that intrigue me, especially Egbuka Egbuka and Luther Burden, but I'm concerned they're going to be more slot guys than anything.
Yeah. But again, like, if it's not Travis Hunter, I don't want him. And yeah, it might, that may be the same case with every single prospect in this draft. I want, if I'm the Patriots, I want Travis Hunter and nobody else.
Yeah, and but like you and I mentioned, you absolutely need a verbal commitment that he's going to play wide receiver. Because if he flakes out and goes corner, you have egg on your face. And it just doesn't look good really at all. But yeah, looking at from like just first standpoint, New England's in tricky waters. And even still, that's if they go out in all out in free agency, because even though they've got a lot of cap space, like well over 130 million, and they don't have like, and last year, look, we know the song and dance about New England, right? Last year, they had all these holes. And once again, it was weird. Even though they fired Bill Belichick, they repeated all of his mistakes. They were very quiet in free agency. Because, look, I know as a team they don't value high-end, like the what we call splash players. But you got over $130 million. And like I said before, I think at least I've said this on the show, I will give them benefit of the doubt, because everybody who is even worth a fraction of a damn needed a contract. Adam, we were talking about this before the show, like Stevenson, Barmore, Duggar, Bourne, Henry, Onwenu, like they all needed an extension or a new deal outright. And I get building a base, but whether or not they even go all out in free agency, which they should, but the fact that we don't know, that's concerning. And even beyond New England and Jacksonville, Adam, who's pick number five? Because it says top five picks. So we already know which way the Jags are going. And Panthers. We certainly know about the Raiders.
Panthers
and
wide receiver. Panthers wide receiver.
Oh, Panthers
are going wide receiver.
Yeah, they're going to grab McMillan. Whether we like it or not, they're going to take McMillan.
Well, whether we like it or not, I mean,
yeah, whether
we root for the Patriots. So we have our biases. We want Travis Hunter.
Yeah, I absolutely do.
If you're a Patriots fan and you want McMillan, I understand. I respect that. Personally, he's not my speed. And he's literally not my speed. He just reminds me too much of prospects who haven't panned out, who never did pan out. And that scares me. And for a team that's already not that good at drafting, you're certainly terrible at drafting after day one. I don't love that. So you need every edge that you can get. And I think that means you need the most polished prospect out there, which is Travis Hunter. And you have to make sure that he's going wide receiver and he's not going to be a corner. Because if they draft Travis Hunter and he turns out to be a corner, that is the dumbest thing of all time. You're not using your number three overall pick for a top corner when you already have Christian Gonzalez, and cornerback two is not your hot. It's not even close to your highest need. You need a wide receiver one. You need a left tackle. You need an edge rusher, and then you need a second corner. Mm-hmm, and you need a center. You don't even Andrew.
Yeah, Andrews is probably going to retire. You need two tackles actually before you need a second corner.
I mean, possibly, but I like Onwenu enough.
No, but are they going to play him there, or are they going to play him at guard?
If they sign Onwenu, and if this team signs Onwenu, if they keep Onwenu at guard and they sign, let's say, Cam Robinson, that's a 2-for-1, and I like it. But at the bare minimum, if they just keep Onwenu at right tackle, then that's fine too.
Yeah, no, then I can live with that. But yeah, so overall, it's just obviously we're gonna have to wait to see how it shakes out. But at the end of the day, you can it literally, if you really stop and think, right? The Patriots are gonna go wide receiver, the Panthers are gonna go wide receiver, the Giants and the Raiders are both going quarterback. Jacksonville holds the key to all of this. And once more, and we can't stress this enough, if they aren't one, they're going to take Sanders. The only way they don't, if they stay at one, is if they trade down with another QB needy team, say a Cleveland type. But overall, like I say, Jacksonville holds the key to all of this. And if New England loses out, which I believe they have one of, if not the hardest remaining schedule, which they probably will, and Jacksonville, who's got a actually manageable schedule without their starting quarterback, we'll see. Because if Jacksonville even has one, if New England loses out and Jacksonville even wins one game, then boom, you're out of the running for Shedeur Sanders, and you're probably going to have to settle for Teterow McMillan.
Right. I wish this draft class was a little better, but I don't think McMillan is the guy. And I think it's Travis Hunter, they need to find a way to get to the third overall pick. And I don't think that's in their this is another thing I wanted to bring up. I don't think that's on their priorities list either. Because I think maybe they were focused on tanking last year, but you don't want to tank twice in a row. We're trudging on thin ice now. Because you don't want it to be a cultural thing where you're just fishing for draft picks. But we are in the position that we're in. At the same time, you can't tank twice in a row. You have to try to win. So they could end up pulling an upset on one of these games. And even if the Jaguars end up winning one game, we still end up at the fourth overall pick because it's a tough situation. You can't just keep losing games every single year. So it's a tough situation because you want to end up with the best player to further your rebuild, but you also don't want to sacrifice your culture, or you want to try and establish a winning culture. It's a tough spot to be in here. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go on to our top three, bottom three real quick. So this is our best and worst performances from, this is the best and worst performances from week 13. In top three, we have the Steelers. The Steelers, they win over in a big one. I mean, they outdueled the Cincinnati Bengals, which may not seem like much because they're 4-8, but this is not your typical 4-8 team. And
no, Burrow has a case to be statistically the best quarterback like in the league, and the defense is abysmal.
Mm-hmm. Our next top three is the Philadelphia Eagles. They just beat one of the better teams as far as offenses go in the league, in the Baltimore Ravens. That's a team that we've been talking about quite a bit in the last couple of weeks. We talked about them earlier this week, but they're one of the better teams in the league now. They started off as being a really, really shaky team. We were talking about Nick Sirianni being on borrowed time. There were a couple games that we've talked about with them being involved in where we literally said, and I quote, "Who wants it less?" Because they were that bad. Boy, have they come a long way since then. We go on to the Washington Commanders. They win big in what is definitionally a get-right game. And they dropped 42 on the Tennessee Titans. And Jaden Daniels had one of the best games statistically that he's had in his young career. Four total touchdowns to just one interception. He passed 25 for 30. Three of those touchdowns were passing. One of them was rushing. 9 carries, 34 yards. He had himself a pretty good game.
And maybe drew back into the lead for Offensive Rookie of the Year.
I mean, with Bo Nix having a bad game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Broncos won, but they got bailed out by famous Jameis and his turnover machine.
I think this week overall created some space between
Nix
and Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix for offensive rookie of the year for that race. All right. We move on to our bottom three. We've got the Atlanta Falcons.
Oh my God.
This could have been a segment because of Kirk Cousins, because this guy,
he's been playing like awfully like the last three games.
Four picks this week, four. And if you throw four interceptions and it ends up being a one score game, it's on you. This loss, it's on you. That means everything else was going fine, and you were the one who lost that game. And listen, we've talked plenty about players coming off Achilles tears, athletes in general. It's obviously a death sentence for running backs, but it's still devastating for any player, and it's hard to come back from. And they should have thought first about the Achilles injury for a 35-year-old quarterback before they gave him a four-year, $180 million deal. And they're strangely fortunate because they have a good young kid waiting on the bench to be started to turn this team around, and they still haven't even considered it. And listen, if they believed in Kirk Cousins, then fine. They ended up being wrong, but that's fine. Then why are you using a top 10 pick on Michael Penix Jr. and not starting him when Cousins when he struggles? You're at a point where, why don't you give him a chance? You're in playoff. I heard, I don't know who said it in our group chat, but they said, one of you said it's because they're still in the playoff hunt, to which I say, that's more reason to start Michael Penix right now, because Cousins.
Oh yeah, hold on. I said that if the Falcons were bottoming out, they would probably start Penix,
which I disagree with, respectively.
Disagreeing with them, because that's the only reason why they're not. I didn't even I disagree with your point.
So you agree that they should be starting him at this point?
Yes. No, I do. I do.
He is killing their playoff hopes.
Yeah, he is actively holding them back. And look, we've said this about Kirk Cousins many and many a time. You're always going to have a floor with Kirk Cousins. Like, you're never going to be bad outright, but you're going to have a ceiling. And it's not a high one. I mean, at least with Penix, like, air him out. Give the kid a shot. And if he sucks, then, you know, you'll put Kirk back in.
I mean, they've lost three in a row here.
Mm-hmm. So, and we're throw like six picks in the last three games, four of them coming in like literally one of them.
He threw four interceptions in this last game. And yeah, he threw an interception against the Broncos, and he threw one interception against, the only one that really stands out is this past game against the Chargers that you probably should have won. If it's a one-score game and you threw four picks in the loss, that means it's on you.
Mm-hmm.
So why haven't they even considered starting Michael Penix at this point?
I told you, it's literally because they're in the playoffs and they don't want to rock the boat, as it were. And for the record, I wasn't saying that to discredit your point. That's literally just me trying to make sense of it. You know what I mean? That's like the only reason why I think they are. Although it has become obvious to even a blind person that Kirk Cousins is not the reason that they've won any games. See, I'm going to say about Kirk Cousins what I said about Tua Tagovailoa. You're not winning because of Kirk. You're winning with him. And that's a big difference between winning with Kirk and winning because of him. Will you win because of Michael Penix? Real talk, I don't know. Do I think the odds are better? Probably.
I think it's different than Tua, because winning, I think, there, to your point, there's a difference. Yes, there's a difference between winning with and winning because, but there's also a difference between winning with and winning in spite. Because with means that you're not hurting them. You're contributing a little bit.
Oh, yeah, no, they're definitely winning. You're right. They're definitely winning in spite of Kirk.
At least Tua, he's not hurting you. He's a solid player. Without without Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, he's probably an average to below average quarterback. But Kirk Cousins has a lot of weapons. He has one of the best offensive lines in the league. The Falcons have built that line up over years, and they've done a very good job on it. And yes, they have you have some questionable coaching there, but look at that. Look at how Kirk Cousins is playing with the talent around him. That's any game that they've been winning, they've won in spite of him, not with him.
So, it's been this way since week one. Literally since week one, the warning signs were there. And it's just...
Which it seems like a money thing at that point, not even a playoffs thing. Because if they really cared about the playoffs, think about this for a second. I'm going to relate it to another situation that is very similar. You're going to be like, holy shit. The 2018 Baltimore Ravens. They started the season with Joe Flacco. They ended the season with Lamar Jackson. And the reason they ended the season with – the whole reason they ended up with Lamar Jackson is the whole reason that they ended up making the playoffs, just barely squeaking in. Now, they had to dumb the playbook down a lot in order to keep them in there. But that's the reason they were able to make the playoffs. They won a bunch of games with Lamar Jackson literally being a running back. And maybe he made a few throws. He didn't develop his arm strength until the following season when he won unanimous MVP. But you made the playoffs that year because you benched your veteran quarterback before you planned to. They did not plan on starting Lamar Jackson that year. But by starting him a little early and just dumbing the playbook down a little bit for the rookie, it saved their season, and they were able to squeak into the playoffs. They weren't going anywhere, but they got to the playoffs, and they held on to their winning culture. And I think that was important for them because that's a huge contributor to the following season where Lamar Jackson just went off. And maybe that could happen here. You get a little bit of confidence built up in Michael Penix. There's no way that he could be psychologically damaged from the situation that they have around him. You have a good offensive line. You have good targets. If the kid can play just a little bit, just don't open the playbook too much. Just have him play a little bit. Build up some confidence. Next year, you make the playoffs, probably not going anywhere, but next year you could end up lighting it up. Yeah. But by keeping Kirk Cousins in here, when you know you have a better quarterback on the bench, you're only hurting the team.
Yeah, it's true. And the only difference I can find between your Ravens example and this is that they did not have well over $100 million wrapped up in Flacco at the time.
Which is, again,
yeah,
we all agree that that's stupid that they did that. I didn't even like the Kirk Cousins deal before they got Michael Penix. Because I just don't, even when Kirk Cousins was healthy, I didn't love him. Even if they got the Kirk Cousins that we know and love, we don't love Kirk Cousins as a Super Bowl winner. I'm sorry, I don't.
No,
I never did. I never did. He's a good quarterback. He'll help your Justin Jeffersons and Drake Londons of the world when he's healthy. Rack up their statistics. You might win some regular season games. You might make the playoffs. But when it comes to winning championships, Kirk Cousins isn't doing it. And certainly he isn't doing it now, where it's clearly he doesn't have it anymore. They should be giving Michael Penix Jr. this opportunity. You drafted the kid. You're lucky that you are in the stupidest situation of all time. Because now you at least have a kid to turn to. Imagine if they didn't have Michael Penix. Then they'd be, whew.
Oh, then they're just screwed all around. But who else is in the bottom?
You're strangely fortunate in your stupidity. That's all I'm saying. What were you going to ask?
Who else is in the bottom three? We've kind of belabored the point, I think.
We have. We did this to death, but that was a point I wanted to put out because I still cannot believe this guy is starting still. Also in the bottom three is the San Francisco 49ers. The Super Bowl curse is real. Not in the sense that you're hungover after winning it, but teams who lose it are never the same. a lot of the times they still make the playoffs, but they don't look the same. And this one isn't even going to the playoffs. This 49ers team, they are cooked, man. They are so done. They lost Christian McCaffrey for the year. And I got to say, I saw it coming. I'm not saying I'm wishing upon injury upon a player, but you can see when a player is about to get worn out. And it's because they get such a massive workload the season prior. You think, oh man, there's no way he's not going to repeat it next year. Wrong. They almost always fall apart because it is very hard to take that kind of workload for multiple seasons and not break down in that league, in the NFL. It doesn't happen. You see it all the time. And everyone says there's a curse for the fantasy football number one overall pick. It's not a curse. It's just logic. You take a player who had a massive workload the year prior. His usage rate was really high. They had this unbelievable season that he'll never repeat. And then you're surprised when he doesn't repeat it and he gets hurt because no player can take on that kind of workload for multiple seasons. It's not a curse. It's just logic. It's common sense. So there's your fantasy football advice for the day. Never take the number one overall pick. Never. It never works out. All right. But the 49ers are screwed. And they just lost again. They lost to a really good team in the Buffalo Bills. There's a team. They're overachieving by their expectations, and a team that could possibly, maybe they're in the conversation for the Super Bowl. I mean, Josh Allen right now is the leader for league MVP. So we'll see. The next team is the Chicago Bears. And yes, they did lose by only one score. They only lost by three. They came all the way back and very nearly won. Yeah, it's the way that they came up short. And everybody already knows it by now. But Matt Eberflus, he was fired the next early afternoon. And I feel like that wasn't even – I feel like that was too long keeping
it. It was. It should have been after the game. Like, leave him in Detroit bad, you know?
That was – and the fact that they let him talk to the media on two separate occasions. Let him talk to him in a post-game press conference. That's fine. Okay, cool. Let's see what he has to say. Let's see if he owns up to what he did, which he didn't, by the way.
He doubled down on it. That's the worst part, arguably.
But then they let him talk again the next day, and then they fired him.
Can't even fire someone right in Chicago. Shame.
They can't. Listen, I really like Caleb Williams. I think he's going to pan out, but I can't help but I can't shake the feeling that they are trying their absolute best to ruin him because he's doing his absolute best. You can see the kid is, he has some really good games. He shows some flashes of brilliance. He could be playing his best football in 2 to 3 years. Maybe he'll be an MVP candidate. I really do believe in him, but his development, there's no question that his development is being stunted by the Chicago Bears organization. And you can kind of see now why they have been so bad at developing quarterbacks over their history. Because holy crap, even when you get the kid, even when you have the guy who could be your franchise's savior, you try to mess him up. It's getting ridiculous. Eberflus shouldn't even been coaching this season. You took Shane Waldron, who's for offensive coordinator, who's a pretty bad pick himself. I mean, he wasn't good in Seattle. He tried to warn us about it. Look at what he's doing over there now in Seattle. I always knew that kid can play, and it's clear that it was just a coaching issue. And now he's arguably their wide receiver one over DK Metcalf. Arguably, we can have that conversation later, but he looks good. Now we're seeing it with Roma Dunze, by the way. so it's like you're trying to mess him up. And I feel so bad for the kid. A lot of people don't like him because of his ego. He's a little weird off the field. I don't care. And I might agree with you as far as ego goes. I'm just talking about performance on the field. The kid can play. And he's not in the wrong in this situation. It's the Bears organization who is messing him up. And it's almost like they're trying to screw him up. And I don't feel for the Bears organization anymore. I just don't. They've been, Ryan Poles has done a lot of a very good job with putting weapons around him. They've tried to put in, put around him a good offensive line, but the coaching is so bad. And Ryan Poles deserves a little bit of blame for that because their coaching situation has been abysmal.
Oh yeah. I did hear, this was from Bleacher Report, that the Bears are going to keep Ryan Poles around. And apparently I've been hearing, like, this is just some other stuff that I've seen and I've like had to go out and look. Some of the local beat reporters have suggested that Poles never wanted Eberflus back and that it's Virginia McCaskey-Hallis, her owner or the owner who said outright, like, who stopped it. And apparently it's ownership that kept Eberflus around as long as they did because Poles wanted to move on. And I think I said this last episode, when you're a GM and you literally have to bend to whatever the owner wants and you have a meddlesome owner like McCaskey, I feel for him just because there's no winning. There's literally not. I've said this before. There's literally no winning. And the fact that it took McCaskey this long to wise up to give Poles the okay to get rid of Eberflus, hopefully she lets him cook in the future because I do think Poles is a great GM.
I think Poles is a really good GM too. I think he's done a very good job overall. There are some things that he hasn't been perfect. There have been, I think he was too nonchalant on getting Justin Fields weapons. But at the same time, I mean, the kid didn't do himself any favors either. He was also having issues with holding onto the ball too long. Even when you got targets, you had DJ Moore, Cole Kmet, Darnell Mooney. Darnell Mooney, who's also doing a great job over there in Atlanta. You have that pass-catching core. You improve your offensive line. And you still took 3.5 seconds to throw the ball. That's your fault.
True.
Yeah. So there's our top three, bottom three. That's all our scheduled content for today. Now that we are now at an hour and 36 minutes. Into this episode, but I mean, lots to talk about, stuff that didn't even become segments that we wanted to, and then ended up talking about anyways, like the Falcons, because we haven't talked about them enough. And I'm sorry, I don't like Kirk Cousins. I didn't like him before he was hurt. I like him even less now. And I think they should bench him for Michael Penix Jr.
Yep. No doubt.
All right. Well, do we have any other thoughts before we end the show today?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, that'll do it for us tonight. Thank you for listening to us. We have all our episodes out on Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and Fridays at 5. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Also, be sure to follow our Instagram at Fumbleroosky Podcast to keep up with our podcast and latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Over and out.